Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast, pitchless.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolski, joined, as always, on the other end by furiously hardworking man himself. It's Nick Pollock.
What is happening? Not hardworking enough, because I know everyone. Where is it? Where is Nick Pollock's top 400 whatever, and soon, TM. I'm trying as hard as I can. Obviously, I got set back because I had this wedding and all.
And also, in the back, pitch injury gone.
There's a lot of things under the hood that we're working on, like the live draft assistant 2.0, which, by the way, when you're listening to this, it will be launched. We have a brand new version of our live draft assistant with average auction values. Okay. So you can understand like the projections values versus what the expected auction value is going to be. It's a whole thing that Ariel Cohen taught me about. It's amazing. Has also our cheat sheet inside of it. So my rankings, Rick's rankings, Scott Chu's rankings are inside our live draft assistant. So when you input the pick, then it's going to update everything inside of it. It's awesome. Much cleaner UI than we had before. So we're launching that. But yeah, it means that I'm behind.
And you had the back injury too. But
The back injury sent me back a week. Yeah, that was great.
Just to piggyback off something you said, just a huge shout out to Rick. If you know, Nick posted Rick's article, his top 300 relievers. And I had a chance this morning. I was just delayed in some of the work that I had to do. And so I had a chance to look through it, especially because, like, I don't know, I'm in a draft and hold right now and I'm in like round 35. And, you know, when you're starting to get into that, you know, those type of drafts, I found Rick's article to be really, really useful and just, it's well written. It's got a lot of really good info. Just check it out if you haven't. I know there's a lot of people doing reliever work and doing good reliever work, and Rick just needs to be in your rotation of people if you want any information on closers.
Yeah, Mike Carter, Greg Jewett, of course, also fantastic when it comes to relievers out there. Greg of Closer Monkey. And I've been really fortunate to have Rick join us full time this year to make it, I guess, including me, is 5 full-time people, which is absurd. And thank you all so much for supporting what we do. We're hoping to make that more in the future. And what Rick did is really update the format of what you're going to see for his closing time, the closers and saves plus holds throughout the years. It's actually going to be that as one truncated article now, not 3 separate ones. And he did such an amazing job and even puts more pressure on me to make sure that I do it right. I've done all the prospects, Eric, which is crazy. I wanted to get that one done because that one I feel is just a different process and I just didn't want to have to think of it. Mm-hmm. And then knowing the prospects, like last year, Noah Cameron, for example, was someone that we jumped on because we knew that the Royals only had 5 options.
Right.
And if there's one break in it, then Noah Cameron was coming up and instantly right away. That's what happened. Cameron got the opportunity, was, you know, singer gone, essentially. And bam, there you go. He had an impact. So
I think that's so useful. We've come to a point, you know, and we're going to get into the discussion for this episode, but just so people know, like, you know, starting rotations normally will go to at least 7 starters in a year. Knowing who the 6th starter is, knowing who the 7th starter is, it's just really, really valuable. Even if they're not starting out the year in the rotation, it's really valuable to know who's the next guy up. And so that stuff is really useful. Obviously, you want to know the big names. We're here to talk about the big names today. We're continuing going through Nick's top 100 we'll get through in podcast form. We're doing 10 pitchers by episode. So we already did starting pitchers 1 through 10 and 11 through 20. So if you are just jumping in right now, make sure to go check those out as well. So we're going to start with starting pitcher number 21 today. And the good news is, this starts off with a new tier. Now, we're going to do the same theme we did before because, again, we just did, I think, only 3 tiers. So it is still the Olympics. They're still ongoing. So I had Nick just name the tiers after Olympic events. And so this tier coming up is Nick's Ace is going to Ace Holly tier. And it is starting with number 21, Yuri Perez. Number 22, Ryan Pepiot. Number 23, Drew Rasmussen. Number 24, Michael King. Number 25, Cam Schlittler. Number 26, Sandy Alcantara. Number 27, Framber Valdez. And number 28, Brandon Woodruff. What's this tier called? And why is it called that?
I'm going to go with gymnastics and the all-around specifically, because that's what these guys are. They're all-around talents. They are doing a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And I mean, to win that, you know, that means you really are a true ace.
Yes.
And okay. I'm doing this because, you know, for every competition, there are more losers than winners. So most of these guys are not going to be that true ace, but yes. They are the ones who I expect going every 5 days. They're the ones I think can all go six innings consistently. I think they can all have a 23% plus strikeout rate. And they should have ratios that are of quality.
Yeah.
Now, it's not as elite in any of those, say for volume, than it is in the actual aces going to ace tiers. Mm-hmm. There's potential for it in some of them. However, it's not quite as much of a slam dunk as the others. So thus, you are in this this like Holly. It's really the Holly tier and not quite the AGA tier. And I want to give it to them soon.
Sure. This is a perfect day to be doing this particular episode because earlier this morning on what day is it? Tuesday? Yeah, Tuesday. I posted my article, which was my article version of my first pitch Arizona presentation on what makes a top 25 starting pitcher. And I went into detail in the article, as I did in the presentation, about the case for some pitchers that are on the fringe of getting inside the top 25. And a lot of them are in this particular tier, including the first one who I, in my article, said is a top 25 lock for me. He is your highest ranked in this tier. It's Eury Pérez. So what made Eury Pérez a top 25 pitcher for you this year?
You know, first of all, Eric, I thought it was really funny. I thought you were saying it's the perfect day to do it because I originally had 21 Pablo Lopez.
Yeah, well, there's
and you know, this is that's something I really think about a ton of. Yes, I was able to talk to him personally back in the end of September about his injury, and he was saying, "Oh no, it's fine. I would have been pitching in a week, you know, not worried about it. I'm going to have a normal offseason." And I think about that a lot of like, obviously he's going to be more positive about it. I think honestly he felt that way and that was it. And yeah. It doesn't necessarily, you know, it's hard to use that information correctly, right? Because obviously there was still something that affected him. Unfortunately, maybe not. Maybe it was just something else that happened this offseason too. But it is really hard to navigate that, right? Anyway, so he's down in like the injury stash tier now, guys. Mm-hmm. We don't really know the exact details of it. There was some report of 6 to 8 weeks he would miss, but it seems like that's not really confirmed yet. We're still waiting to hear the announcement of.
Yeah, they said it was precautionary, so we'll see. It's probably going to be a couple of days before he picks up a baseball again and tries to throw. This is Pablo Lopez we're talking about, and you know, then we'll get a better sense of it, and maybe he does end up in this tier. We'll have to see. But I think you and I are both really in on Eury Pérez this year, and he could be a top 25 arm even if it winds up being 22 instead of 21.
This is really me hedging. Because I there are a lot of pitchers where I don't know what we're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And I generally avoid drafting those, honestly, because it's it's like it's putting too much risk because I'm assessing the fact that like Eury Pérez has not done the thing yet.
Yeah.
He has not done the amazing breaking balls with a really good attack with lefties quite yet. Like the slider and curve have had those 20% swing strike rate pitches in the past. And we have the sweeper at 21% last year with a slider at 18%. Yes. But 58% strike rate on 23% thrown sliders, right? 20% swing strike rate on the curve, 65% strike rate at the same time, it's just 9% overall usage. And really what makes Eury Pérez exciting is the fact that his four seamer has so many phenomenal characteristics, 98 miles per hour. He's surprisingly flat with it. 1.3 height adjusted VAA despite the 17 inches of vert, and it's a phenomenal fastball. He just doesn't locate it well though.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think of like elite four seamers, and when they actually turn into those studs, it has to be paired with the right command of it, and it also has to be paired with something that is consistent and reliable off of it. And I don't think that Eury has that yet. Like Hunter Green, for example, struggled a little bit with that. He didn't really have that location of the four seamer, right? He didn't have the location of his sliders. And yes, he was good, but he wasn't incredible because he couldn't get the four seamer upstairs properly. He couldn't get the slider in for a strike for a while. Now Urie has more, but it's he's still working on it all. They even tried to make the changeup work against lefties so often, and it's not a strike, but he kept trying, and that's what's really cool.
And we do know last year was the first coming off Tommy John, so we do know that like that precision of command tends to, you know, be one of the last things that comes back. Not that Urie Perez was always a pitcher who had pinpoint command, and this is the difference between like command and control, right? Where like he had essentially a 60% zone rate on his four seam fastball, which is good. He's getting the four seamer in the zone. That's better than not getting it in the zone, but that doesn't mean that he's getting it exactly where it needs to go. Yeah. So on one hand, it's good he's throwing it four strikes because he has good velocity on it. So maybe he's able to get ahead, even though it's not located perfectly.
But 7th percentile high location. 7th percentile high location on his four seamer.
Not great.
That's high lock, which is just not what you're supposed to do with this. And also against lefties, like that pitch had a 13% put away rate because he had nothing else. Like there's so many at bats I saw where the guys would just foul it off. They knew it would be coming. He couldn't throw a slider or a curveball in there. Definitely not the changeup. And it's still a work in progress. And the fact that I have a guy who's still a work in progress at 21 is, it's hard. But the thing is, the other guys don't have quite the same top 10 ceiling.
I think that's the way it goes, especially when you have a year where like, okay, you know, Gerrit Cole is currently hurt. Corbin Burnes is currently hurt. Zach Wheeler is currently hurt. Like, you know, some names that would normally be up that high, we're not ranking that high because they're, you know, going to be delayed or we don't know what their health is. And so it's like, okay, do you go with somebody who's safe and is probably going to be fine? Or Urie Perez, who like, yeah, there are some flaws, but it's easy to, it's not like we are wish casting
right
what gets him to this level. We're saying we've seen flashes of it. We know what he needs to do. We know that he's capable of doing it. It needs to be done consistently. You know, that strikeout pitch to lefties you're talking about, like his harder slider had a 21% swinging strike rate to lefties. That's really good. It didn't consistently work in two strike counts the way we wanted it to, but he has a pitch that gets whiffs to lefties in addition to his fastball. So is it a sequencing thing that he needs to change? Is it a little bit of a command thing where like, yeah, you'll get those chases early in the count, but then when people start looking for it, they're not going to chase it if you can't locate it properly or close to the zone. So
I mean, to be fair, 26% put away rate to lefties with that slider. So maybe that is something that he does develop more so, and it wasn't really there earlier on, I guess, and he got better at it. So that is more encouraging, actually. I didn't realize that, so I'm happy you pointed that out.
Hey, it was in my article, so I'm happy to point it out to you.
But right, so he needs it at least earlier in the counts too, or something else to really to take down lefties. But right, it really is just, are you going to get the command that we want you to see and want you to have? And I wouldn't say that the Marlins are an organization I have a ton of faith in, to be honest. So we'll see how this develops. But it's interesting because you'll see this across the entire tier of why this works and then why it doesn't.
Yeah. And listen, a nearly 15% swinging strike rate on the whole for Urie Perez. Like, this is a pitcher where the raw upside is high enough that if you get 150 innings,
which you should,
could still be a top 20, top 25 finish.
And if you want to say he's an injury risk too, no, guys, remember, half of a season is ideal. It is ideal because you've done the perfect rehab to set you up for being a workhorse. And yeah, I mean, this is a case of, it should still be very beneficial for you. It could be like a 4+ ERA, but it shouldn't be higher than a 120 WHIP because of that walk rate. Mm-hmm. It should be a lot of strikeouts, a lot of volume. You know, you have that floor still. It's not like a risk of a not worthy on your team.
Another player that I had also in my top 25 in the article comes in at number 22 for you. It's Ryan Pepiot. You know, one of the things that we've talked about ad nauseum, so we don't need to go into that part, is obviously the move away from Steinbrenner Field back to Tropicana is going to be good for him. His home run to fly ball rate and, you know, homers per nine were pretty good in Tropicana last or 2 years ago. They were an improvement from when he was with the Dodgers. And then they spiked back up last year when he was playing in a minor league park. They should go back down. And that's something where, like, you might look at that 3.8 something ERA for Pepiot, and if some of those homers are fly balls or even doubles, I mean, you're going to get somebody who I think is closer to that, like, 3.5 ERA. The question I have, which maybe you have the answer to, is a little bit of that, where the whiffs come from, because his strikeout minus walk rate, overall swinging strike rate, they're fine. They're not bad, but they are not at the level that we usually see from pitchers who finish in the top 20, top 25 in fantasy, because they have that, like, really high strikeout total.
Sure. So Ryan Pepiot is essentially a four-seamer changeup and a slider guy. And what I see is someone who had to deal with George Steinbrenner Field. And keep in mind, it's not just about, like, the home runs and all. It's about, as a pitcher, it's not as consistent. This is something we've talked about for a long time with Rasmussen and with Boz, really, is the major context. But with Pepiot too. And you go from there to the dome of Tropicana. The four-seamer, which is already elite, gets even better there. It is the highest increase of vert in any stadium was Tropicana in 2024. So you get that. That's a higher swing strike rate, you would think, on the four-seamer as well, which is really his main pitch. It is the one that had a 14% swing strike rate against righties. And I think that really is the generator. While really the next step for him is just throwing the slider and changeup and getting even a better feel for them. Ensuring that the slider can be that pitch that goes down and away to right-handers. It had an 18% swing strike rate in 2024, and in 2025, it was down to 13%. That four-seamer was a 14% in 24, I should say, and 10% last year against righties. And I think that's really where it comes back, right? So that's really everything in a nutshell. Not to mention, last year, even with that tumultuous situation, Ryan Pepiot was still really hard to hit, only 7.2 hits per nine. His home run rate went up, but in the walk rate at 9%, still under a 4 ERA, still about a 1.15 whip. And I see someone again who's going to go close to 170 innings with the Rays. The Rays don't have many workhorses, especially now that even Boz is gone too.
Yeah.
They're going to be relying on Pepiot, because McClanahan, we already know, is probably going to get, like, the Drew Rasmussen treatment. Mm-hmm. And if we're lucky, let's be honest. So I love this. I think you're going to see a lovely strikeout volume here. I think you have potential for more, and you have that good floor.
I'm a big fan of it as well. I think people aren't fully bought in, and that's fine. I think there's a lot of value to be had in drafts. I also think people are not fully bought in on your next pitcher, who is Pepiot's teammate. It's Drew Rasmussen. You alluded to the Drew Rasmussen treatment when you were talking about Shane McClanahan. That was obviously last year. Rasmussen was coming off an injury, and Tampa Bay was pretty rigid in, like, keeping him around five innings. Even when he was cruising, it seemed like there were some starts where he would throw, like, 68 total pitches, but it was five innings and they got him out. But again, he finished as a top 25 starting pitcher last year, despite the innings cap, and despite, frankly, not really having a lot of swing and miss in his game. Like, he wasn't a Hunter Green type where you're going to throw 120 innings but finish in the top 25 because your strikeout rate is like 37%, and so you're racking up fantasy value. Rasmussen just, like, had incredible ratios, was setting his team up for wins even though he wasn't going deep into games. It was something that seems sustainable. And Rasmussen, since he's become a starting pitcher, has performed really well. Like, in terms of his overall, just his surface level stats have performed really well. And I think people don't believe that, like, pitchers carry the talent of being able to induce weak contact. But Rasmussen keeps hitters off the barrel. And I think that is sustainable year over year.
Oh, he certainly does. It's really bonkers. Really, the crux of the backbone of his approach is a four-seamer cutter sinker, and that's really it. I want to say that the sweeper and the curveball will take a step forward, maybe a slider, something along those lines, because then he would actually be able to have higher put away rates and get those strikeouts. Still, even so, his strikeout rate will never really be 25%, 30% because he's inducing these outs earlier than other pitchers. So that means he's not getting to two strikes as often as other pitchers. And going back to it, it's a cutter that moves so much relative to his four-seamer. His four-seamer comes in at 96 and his cutter is at 90. And this cutter is coming in at a 2.5 vert, which is 14 inches of drop, more than the four-seamer already. And then you have 8 inches lateral. That's a ton. That's a ton of difference in break at 90 versus 96. And it locates it really well. The four-seamer stays up and the cutter goes glove side to right-handers. And then against lefties, he pretty much does the same. I mean, this is really his MO. What's interesting is the sinker is a front hip pitch to lefties. And that's a rarity. You don't see that often. It does have a good swing, called strike rate, but it does get hit really hard. And I think if there's one area of improvement, I'd say actually there's two for Rasmussen outside of course, like the secondaries. We want to see something non-fastball that is effective for him. It's his usage of four-seamer and sinker, where we're seeing 14% usage on the sinker to lefties. It is trying to be that two-strike pitch. You know, it's a like over 50% usage in two strike counts to lefties. So trying to be that front hip thing, it can be successful, 19% put away rate, but it did have a near 60% ICR because of it. Not the largest sample, but still it's 15 of those 15 times he allowed that contact. And same thing really with the four seamer. It was against right-handers. It was another 18 because he's trying to throw these four seamers again, more so in two strike counts than the sinker. So sinker goes inside to right-handers, cutter goes away. Four-seamer stays up, but he does make some mistakes with that. And I actually do think Rasmussen could really play this easier of four-seamers just staying up in two strike counts. Don't try to attack too often early with it. Lean into the sinker, lean into the cutter, get the weak contact, which is like 30% ICR for both of those against righties. Yeah. And then you have inside to lefties, you have the, don't really do the front hip too much. I mean, sure, but I would maybe hold off on it a little bit more and just lean into the cutter, lean to the four seamer. And then hopefully there is something else that shows up that is of a slower velocity and that has more movement. But really, I mean, this is a ratio guy. He should be going about 150 innings. Again, I think the Rays are not going to change what they did last year. It worked. They had Rasmussen for a full season. I wouldn't play with fire here. And I think that it's going to be even better. It should be, considering he won't be in George Steinbrenner Field. So, yeah, this is a really nice ratio floor.
I like Rasmussen also as your SP2 if you're able to pair him with, you know, somebody like, you know, like an Ohtani or like a Cole Reagans or somebody where, like, you can get a little bit more of that strikeout upside from somebody else. And then Rasmussen is not going to give you that. So, you know, you don't want to put yourself too far behind strikeouts. But as we know, like when you get to, you know, your SP 30 through 50, 55 range, whatever it is, there's a lot of guys who like miss bats, but have a lot of question marks. And so if you have a safe ratio floor with some of your early pitchers, then you could take gambles on some of those guys who are just strikeout guys.
It is interesting. You might want to say like, okay, Rasmussen pair with a younger one, like one of the hype seven or whatever, because then, hey, I'm going to get strikeouts there, but I don't know what the whip and ERA is going to look like. However, you're not going to get the volume.
The volume. That's why I almost said, like, I pair Rasmussen with Hunter Green. And then I'm like, well, what if I get 140 innings from both?
Right. Like Chase Burns, you know?
Yeah.
And what I would say is Cease is the perfect pairing.
Fair. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe even Framber Valdez. Like, because Valdez should get a fair number of strikeouts and just get the Warriors whip, right? Mm-hmm. And great. We have a very low one with Rasmussen because he doesn't walk batters and he's hard to hit. Yep. And that's great. So I think Rasmussen is a phenomenal stabilizer among your drafts. Yep. Even just going Ryan Pepiot and Rasmussen sounds good to me. You know, they complement each other. So
sounds good to Tampa too. And we will get to Framber Valdez later, but there's another intriguing pitcher coming up and we'll talk about him after this break. you and I have gone back and forth on the next starting pitcher a bunch because we both don't really know where to rank him. You have Michael King 24th. I currently have him 29th. He was, I believe, in both of our top 10s heading into last year. Obviously, that was after 1 year as a starter in San Diego, so we don't have the track record of success for King. Last year's injury felt a little fluky. It apparently didn't happen while he was pitching. You know, there was the shoulder injury because he slept wrong, but then there was a nerve component to that, and he wound up being out for a while. You were much lower on him a few weeks ago. So I'm curious just what has changed, where your mind is at right now on Michael.
I literally just dropped him. So to 28, and guys, I'm in like my final stages of my list creation, where I still have some guys I need to write and everything. And I'm up to the Padres.
So let's put, when we use finance speak here, we're going to put a pin in that. And we're going to circle back because we're still going to get to number 28 on this podcast. Okay. So we're just going to put a pin in that right now.
All right,
we're going to move to, I think, somebody who's actually a pretty good number 24 for you, because you said about Drew Rasmussen, you really hoped that we could get a step forward from a pitch that wasn't a fastball. And I think the same thing about Cam Schlittler, because one of my worries about Cam Schlittler, who you now have as your SP 24, is that while there was a lot to like last year for the Yankees, everything he throws, in particular to righties, is basically 92 miles an hour or harder. And they're all fastball variations, four seam, sinker, cutter. And now the cutter is a really good two strike pitch for him. And so I have amended my earlier kind of hesitation on Cam Schlittler, because even though it's a cutter, it is not just a get me over cutter. Yeah. It is a legitimate swinging strike pitch. And so it can be treated as a secondary in that respect. However, and I'm not saying Cam Schlittler is Graham Ashcraft, but my concern about Graham Ashcraft back in the day was, hey, everything I throw to righties is hard. I don't have anything else. Now, Graham Ashcraft also only attacked away to righties, which was another issue. He couldn't get the ball inside, and Schlittler can. So that's why it's not the same level of concern. But I would love something that was a little softer to righties.
Which is interesting, because Schlittler was known as the guy that had all the secondaries, the sweeper and the curveball, and was and he does have a curveball. It's not utilized as much to right-handers. It's more to lefties. And I do think that we'll see more curveballs to right-handers this year. There's a lot of potential in that pitch. I think that we haven't seen the finished product of Cam. I really believe that the Yankees brought him up. He was accelerating not just through the system, but with his pitches. I mean, his velocity kind of jumped massively overnight. And now you have Cam, who really was like, okay, I'm just going to throw hard with my fastball. I'm trying to figure out what I do elsewise. Oh, cool. Here's a cutter that works with this curveball. He even figured it out like while he's in the majors and only had 6-8 starts with that approach. Now you have an offseason with the Yankees. They say, great, sinkers inside of righties. And this is going to be the breaking ball you're going to have to righties. This is what you're going to do to lefties now. Now we can actually develop properly with the tool set that he has. Really, I've gone back and forth with Schlittler just because of health. I don't know. And I thought eventually that was stupid because everyone, like, I could throw an injury question mark on everyone. And we want to say the acceleration of velocity. We just saw it with Schwalbach. Fine. We've also seen velocity jumps from people, and they haven't had some sort of massive injury after. So I'm not going to hold that over Cam. I think also the Yankees are in this really interesting situation of having depth and also no depth. So they right now have Gerrit Cole and Carlos Rodon on the IL, right? So they're entering the season. They have their five, which is Fried, Schlittler, Will Warren, Luis Gil, and Ryan Weathers. And they do have like some other weird options. Like, okay, Ryan Yarbrough exists and Paul Blackburn exists and Osvaldo Bido And yes, we did see the Carlos Carrasco thing last year, but that was a very specific scenario. I think I would be surprised if, I mean, I think actually Aaron Boone even said that those are our five, right? Mm-hmm. Now there's also Cade Winquest, who is a real five pickup, and he would have to be in the majors. So I'm thinking if there is a problem, it's him. And then you have Elmer Cruz Rodriguez and Carlos Lagrange, which, by the way, I just got to say, Eric, I put out my Lagrange video.
I know.
Before all the others, I was, oh, man, I was like two or three days early, I guess, because that's what's
going to be. People are all over him now.
And what's really funny is no one really picked up the fact that I had ZZ Top's Lagrange going on in the background.
No, they wouldn't have. No.
They did not listen to it. Dun, 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 dun. It was so good. Anyway, the way I see it is like, oh, Cam, you got to handle this, because if anyone else goes down, like, you know, he's going to actually have to have us. And I know that Rodon and Cole will come back, but I really do think that it's not just like, oh, cool, Cam, just take it easy. Like, yeah, something is going to go wrong. And yeah, they're going to be leaning on Cam a bit this year too. So he also threw over 140 innings. I mean, it's close to like 160, including the playoffs from last year. Say what you want about that. I like guys who have higher volume because it means that they've done it. And you can't really be a trusted workhorse until you've done it.
Right.
So I'm in favor of that. Yeah, I think that Cam's a great one.
There's a lot to like about Cam Sutler. I want to ask you a very quick detour question.
Please.
Because it connects to a name that you just said, which is Ryan Weathers. I'm just curious. I want your general quick reaction to everybody's going gaga that Weathers hit 98.5 on the gun. My question to you is just like, do you actually even want to see a guy who has repeated arm issues gassing it up that early in spring training? Let these guys kind of slow
build? No. So first and foremost, guys gas it up in the offseason all the time. Like, there are these moments like, okay, cool, you're supposed to throw hard in the night. It's like intensity stuff. So it's fine to gas it up to 98.5 for a moment or so. Some other veterans are like, no, I don't want to do that. I'm going to be lackadaisical about it. Sure. The way I see Ryan Weathers is you should not be drafting him as your top four starting pitchers in 12 teamers. And he is the perfect one to grab. Once you see all the guys who, you know, are going to be stable throughout the year gone off the board, Ryan Weathers is the perfect one, because the only question we really have about him is health. He's going to be a better pitcher. He has the same tweak to make that the Phillies made with Luzardo. Not the sweeper. Throwing sinkers inside of lefties. Oh my gosh, the Marlins just hate it as a lefty for some reason. He has a ton of horizontal movement on his sinker. His four-seamer does not perform nearly as well against left-handers. The Yankees are obviously going to say, throw this, not that, inside of lefties. And he's already been getting, you know, I'm not going to read too much into it, but like, he's been getting help from Fried and from Rodon on how to make his breaking ball better to lefties, which is, I think, his worst asset. So I think he's perfect for getting as your SP5, SP6, and I'm not at all taking into account the 98 gassing thing. At least it's not like, I'd much rather see that than him not, you know, like, you want to see the two sides of it. The big worry is he going to have the same velocity? Yes, he does. Great. Awesome. Tick. And if it's health, sure, I'll get him for 2 months, start of the year. Like, this is the kind of guy that you want where you shouldn't be banking on them being on your roster for the full year.
Okay. Glad we cleared that up.
Yeah.
Now, kind of like almost not really the exact opposite of Cam Schlittler, but close to it is your next guy. Because instead of like young, exciting upside, we have, I guess, veteran who some people seem to think is kind of like his best days are behind him. And so your number 25 starting pitcher is Sandy Alcantara, who is another guy who you had much lower.
Yeah, it's really difficult. I don't know, guys. It's with Sandy, we all know, hey, Nick, you're the Sandy guy. You love this man. I'm like, of course I do. And what I loved about him back in the day was he would get 18% swing strike rates on his four-seamer because he would actually locate it up and then have the sinker underneath it effectively, with the changeup also being a major weapon. And what we saw last year were struggles with the four-seamer in sinker locations. And then also the changeup not really being in tandem with them until really the second half. So I want to believe that that is that guy, right? That is Sandy, He can do that. He's fine with it now. Velocity is not an issue. Volume isn't an issue. There is some talk about him throwing a sweeper and all that kind of stuff. I want to remind everybody, you're going to hear a ton about new pitches. Yeah. There is maybe one that I'm convinced of already, but he is someone actually we'll talk about later on this podcast. And it's something I expected anyway for them to do. But it's rare for like, you know, I'm not going to say that Sandy is going to be fixed because of the sweeper. It could be. It could be helpful. I can see that working because the slider curve maybe a little bit too fast and like something slower is really good, actually, tailing away from guys. But at the end of the day, I just feel like, yeah, he's still going to be hard to hit. Yeah, he has his velocity. He found his change of feel by the end. I'm going to buy into that a little bit more. And it was a really rough initial return. And then he got there. So, Brian, Andy, we love you.
I have this. I took the same approach. I had him in my around my 40s, and I moved him up to number 26 because there's just this tier of guys who you have in the same range. For me, Framber, Sandy Alcantara, Rasmussen. I just kind of feel like I feel like they're relatively safe.
Yeah,
like it may not. There may not be ace. They may not be aces. But I feel like I kind of know what I'm getting, and I am operating under the assumption with Sandy Alcantara, like you, that we saw him start to get back to himself a little bit more in the second half of the season. We know coming off of Tommy John, it doesn't click right away for a lot of these guys. So I expect something more similar to the pitcher we had seen before surgery. And I just kind of feel like, yeah, maybe it's higher than I would normally want to put him, but it just made sense to put him in this range. And if you get to this point in your draft and you're thinking, I actually want something with more upside, then fine. Don't take him here. Take one of the number of young pitchers that's going to be coming up a little bit behind in the rankings who are maybe riskier, but maybe where you're at, you want to lean into the risk and fine. Then what does it matter?
You know? So then you also have, Framber Valdez right after, just kind of the same idea, right? And you know, I've talked about this for ages of okay, he has his curveball or he doesn't have his curveball. What is good is that Framber doesn't stay as the same thing the entire year. And yeah, there is going to be some whip risk. There is going to be some volatility risk. At the end of the day, though, like I do recognize that all right, Framber Valdez, you have a really, really good sinker to lefties that is just still so impossible to hit. Mm-hmm. He gets burned by defense a little bit, with grounders, where if the defense lets him down, then it's not going to be great. He should have relatively higher BABIPs because that sinker can be very hittable to right-handers. And that's where the curveball comes in. It's where the changeup comes in. It's really one of those cases of, yeah, you're going to hold on to Framber for the full year. And it might not be ideal. It might be fine. I think he's going to go to Detroit and settle in and feel comfortable there. It's a good environment, I believe. I think with Tarek Skubal, it'll be helpful. Like it should just be fine. So I'm like, all right, I don't see this being actual drop territory as it felt like in the middle of 2024. I feel like that was the very worst of it. And we generally should see beneficial Framber.
Yeah. I just push back on people referring to Framber Valdez as like an ace or a fringe ace. I mean,
yeah.
Again,
well, he acts like it for 2 months.
Right. Yeah. And again, you know, player raters aren't the perfect example of that, but they are just like, did this person finish as an ace? And in the last 4 years, Framber Valdez has finished as, so this is back in 2014, that would have been 2021. He finished as SP24, SP17, SP10, which was in 2024, and then last year, 39th. So, like, yes, he had 1 year in 2024 where he was a rock solid, definite ace in terms of his finish. The rest is like in a 12 team league for sure. The ceiling is as an SP2. And oftentimes it's kind of like fringe SP2, SP3 in a 12-team league. I like Framber Valdez. I'm fine with Framber Valdez. As of now, I have him 23rd. And so like that feels fair to me. He's so curveball reliant. We talked about
that. Yeah, it's so annoying. Times. It's like for a guy who's so steady he's honestly like the elite great undulator, you know, in this way. But yeah, it's at the end of the day, guys, like you can say like, oh no, he's going to be this or he's going to be that. It's like, well, as Eric is saying here, we don't know, but he will probably normalize effectively. So yeah, whatever.
Yes, whatever. It's fine. It's not, I don't love it, but I'll take it. It's fine. Let's finish up the last pitcher in this tier. Number 27, Brandon Woodruff. We've talked about him a lot. We talked about how he came back last year. We talked about some new pitches, all of that stuff. I guess my question for you with Brandon Woodruff, also, I have him much lower because I have not yet moved him out of this tier of guys who ended the year injured. And I'm kind of like, I know that they think he's healthy, but it was a shoulder injury coming off of.
Was it shoulder at the end of the year? Was it, I thought it was lat or oblique?
It was not oblique. It may have been, I mean, it was a lat strain. But okay. Isn't, I mean, like, are we not saying the lat is part of the shoulder? I mean, it's not the top of the shoulder, but it's the back of the shoulder. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if I'm at the gym and I'm working my lat.
Why do I keep forgetting about this injury?
So it was a lat strain. And the year before was the shoulder capsule surgery. And so maybe they're not, I'm not a physiologist. I'm not a doctor. I don't know how connected they are. I know that they seem like it's logical that it could be connected, but it's also just like, are we worried about the injuries with Brandon Woodruff, where we are ranking him this high? I don't care about the sprained ankle. I don't care.
I've already moved him down.
Contusion, all of that stuff that happened last year. It's the lat strain.
I appreciate you.
Shoulder capsule surgery.
Yeah, no. I don't know. I feel like there have been three times where I've been doing Brandon Woodruff and then like realizing later, wait, hold on a second, he's hurt, or like he has a question mark with the injury part, and I'm like, oh right, I gotta bring him down. Right. I just brought him down into a tier that we'll talk about in our next episode, which has a lot of these injury. You know, I made two separate cherry bomb tiers instead of one. And so like where Blake Snell is, for example, I'm going to put Brandon Woodruff in that.
Yeah.
Nathan Eovaldi's in that one. So is Shane McClanahan.
It's so tough. Like, so Pat Murphy, the Brewers manager, and like the first or second day of spring training, mm-hmm. was asked about Woodruff and said, he's coming off the lat injury. You want to be careful. We're going to rely on him heavily. So you've got to be careful. So it's like in that one quote, you're like, we're going to rely on him heavily. Yes, you've got to be careful. No. So like, I don't know what to make of that. What does that mean in terms of how he's going to be ramped up? We're going to rely on him heavily. So we have to be careful with him.
Yeah.
It's the rule of thumb. Early for me to know where I'm at.
The rule of thumb that I will say often, and it's the most annoying thing because I'm doing these rankings and like, it's part of the times I don't listen to my rankings, is that the rule of thumb is you just don't draft them. You just, anytime there's like this weirdness of injury right around the start of the season, if you look back at last year's last edition of the list and anyone that was missing time, it was what, Ranger Suarez was the best one.
Yeah.
And that was, we came back on May 1st. You know, it's not worth it to do it. So you're not going to lose your leagues because you didn't get Brandon Woodruff, you know, at this value or something like that. We get addicted to value of like, it could be like, you just don't want to lose your draft. And I personally am going to rely on my skill set to pick up guys in season to pad an already great rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's, yeah, I have Woodruff at 40 now. Okay.
So we're going to move on to a brand new tier, but we're going to do that after this break. So we're back to the familiar name again, because the brand new tier is the Cherry Bomb tier. And it starts with number 27, Michael King, number 28, Dylan Cease, number 29, Chase Burns, number 30, Jesus Luzardo, and number 31, a pitcher we will not name today, but you will hear about on our next episode. So what's this tier called and why is it called that?
This one. I am going to go with, oh, I've already done, I'm trying to remember the ones I did before. I'm going to go with figure skating.
Okay. I've got one for you.
That actually, I'll do more specifically speed skating.
Okay.
Because speed skating, it's like it can be really boring to watch. Or you can have the ones where the guy's coming in last and all of them collide and all of a sudden the guy slides into first. And we've seen that 20 million times and it's very exciting. Yeah. And it can be great. It can be like, whatever. It's also such a strange, to me, there's certain like events that are very popularized and very huge and become like legacy, you know, amazing. Yeah. And like speed skating is just to me of this, it's such a very specific thing that can you make a life around this? Is this like, is that, can you? I mean, maybe like one or two people.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But it's such a strange specific thing. So cherry bomb.
I think the good cherry bomb tier also, I'll just shout it out, but I don't know if everybody had a chance to watch the highlights from the Olympics of the men's dual moguls. But that was one of the events that I was working. That was the event that's been going on around on social media where Ikuma Hiroshima, the Hiroshima from Japan, like went off the bump and did like the backflip in air where he was like on one ski and then landed wrong and got up and skied the end of the race backwards. It was totally wild. It was insane. It was like the most fun thing to watch live. It was out of control and it was also amazing, but it was so messy. And that's kind of how I feel like a lot of these pitchers in this nice. Tier, where it's like, it's messy, it's out of control. And sometimes at the end, you're going to be like, that was amazing.
Wait, so I think I saw, so he landed backwards and he slid back down, right?
He landed and like fell, he landed backwards and like fell, but like briefly because he's like ridiculously athletic where he was able to kind of like fall and get up in one motion and then ski down the rest of the course backwards.
Oh man, that's so cool. But in this cherry bomb tier, we have Michael King. And Michael King is that guy that we're talking about before where we don't really know what to do with him because is he totally fine and back into it? We didn't really see him get into any sort of rhythm last year, but then again, the injury was a nerve thing because he slept on it. It's not like he's injury prone necessarily. He didn't quite have his command last year. I'm tempted to put him in that other cherry bomb tier, but I do have more confidence that we'll get Michael King. You know, I did speak to someone with the Padres and they were like, yeah, Michael King's here. He's fine. Like you should be excited about Michael King. I was like, all right. I mean, I want to believe that if it, you know, obviously there's all those biases. And every time you talk to people like that, like I was talking about with, you know, someone else before. And at the end of the day, like Michael King really is like Framber, is like Sandy. You know, he really is a healthy Woodruff, right? So I feel like he should be valued up here more so than your younger arms. But, you know, there is still that worry. And I feel like once we see him in spring going every 5 days, we're going to be really confident in this.
Yeah, I don't have much to add on that as well. I think I'm happy to have him here. I have him 29th. You have him 27th. It's kind of the same. Yeah. Dylan Cease is in this boat as a cherry bomb. That makes total sense to me. I have Dylan Cease higher. I have him 21st. But every time I rank him up there, I'm like, I hate this. And then I'm like, but I can't put him below Framber Valdez because I think I would always choose Dylan Cease over Framber Valdez. And so if I'm being true to myself, I'm going to put Cease up here.
There's more stability to Framber.
There is. Oh, for sure there is. I think at this point, like, we know who Dylan Cease is. Like,
We don't know what we're going to get.
Well, but I think we do in the sense that, like, I think the narrative of, oh, well, now he's in on a new team in a new park, and what if they mess with his pitch mix? What if they add something to his arsenal? I just don't think that Dylan Cease is going to be a materialistically different arm. He's tried to throw a sinker. He's tried to throw a cutter. Those things haven't done.
Not enough.
So
not hard enough.
Right. So I just think for me, when I say we know who Dylan Cease is, I mean, even though he is very mercurial and some seasons he's great and some seasons he isn't, I just mean, I don't think fundamentally he is going to all of a sudden become a different type of pitcher because he's now in Toronto. I don't think we're going to see him become any more consistent or more whatever. So I think what you've seen from before with Dylan Cease is kind of what you're going to get. I mean, last year, 8th percentile four-seam fastball zone rate. And I know that we talked about the difference between zone rate and strike rate with four-seam fastballs, and your zone rate can be low, but you can get lots of strikes if you get whiffs on your four-seam fastball. You get chases out of the zone. But to me, like, that's also an emblem. That's emblematic of who Dylan Cease is, right? Poor four-seam fastball command. He has very inconsistent command, and so there are going to be stretches where he gets behind constantly.
Yeah,
but he also has a lot of swing and miss upside, and he's going to be on a good team, and he's in a pretty decent pitcher's park, and he's going to give you a solid chunk of innings. And so there's also the, you know, accumulation aspect of, like, that's going to be a pretty solid profile.
Yeah. There's also the fact that you have to roster him. And something I do say a lot is I tend to lower rankings of specific guys because I just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
And Blake Snell is one of them. Dylan Cease is one of them. And I can see myself pairing Dylan Cease with Rasmussen. I think that is the case for Dylan Cease, is if you get Drew Rasmussen first, because it's the perfect matching, right? Pair. But otherwise, yeah, it's, I know he's going to be great, and it's annoying. But, like, he's just too inefficient. That's really what it is. It's when you don't throw as much in the zone successfully, and you don't have such a varied arsenal, you're going to throw fewer strikes, which means your at bats are going to be longer. And sure, that does open the door for strikeouts. It's part of the reason why Dylan Cease gets them a lot, because he throws balls. Is that guys are more passive then for the strikes at times, right? And he's hard to hit, so it just makes it a scenario like that. But that doesn't mean he's going to go six innings constantly. It means he's probably going to go five and change a decent amount, right? It adds up. So it's just frustrating. And yeah, I put him here. I had to put him somewhere. If you need lots of strikeouts, then there you go. It could be great, but I just don't want to deal with it.
Yep, I agree with you on that one. Let's move to the next one. And I'm very curious about your take. We've talked a lot about Chase Burns, who comes in as your starting pitcher, number 29. And so I think we have talked a lot about his strikeout upside. We've talked a lot about, like, how, you know, the pitch mix needs to be deeper, but the changeup flashed as the potential pitch that could do that. We've talked about, even in the 10 strikeout games, the ERA wasn't great. What we didn't talk about, though, and what I think we should address, is that he had a flexor strain in the second half of the season, and he came back and pitched out of the bullpen. And there is a narrative that we have been telling ourselves where he pitched out of the bullpen just because, you know, they had a lot of guys and they didn't need to. But, you know, he was out for a month, and then he came back and only made five appearances out of the bullpen. And I just don't know that this is a guy who is locked into a rotation spot. First of all, I think he has the inside track on one, but the Reds have publicly said he's in a battle for a rotation spot. And they may just be saying that because he's 23 years old. They're not going to, like, give it to him. It could be just team talk, but also, like, it's mildly concerning that he was coming off of the injury at the end of the year, that even in the minor leagues, he's never thrown more than 66 innings. And so they might want to be a little more cautious with him coming off of that injury. I don't know. I'm throwing out ideas of why maybe we should be a little more cautious of, like, anointing him as the next big thing than we are.
Well, okay. So first and foremost, yeah, 29. It's not like Erie. It's not like Cam, even. Sure. I have him in a different tier for that reason. It is interesting that you're saying that he is in a battle. I mean, I guess Rhett Lauder is the one he's battling against.
I mean, listen, I'm mentioning that only because it was stated.
Teams, I'm trying. I'm just trying to even. I was like, who is even, like?
Teams say their things all the time I guess right now Connor Phillips is, I think, full time in the bullpen. So it might not be him. It's probably not going to be, you know, Chase Petty, even though Chase Petty was
a prospect. Brandon Williamson had Tommy John in September 2024.
But he had
UCL surgery last July. Graham Ashcraft again. Julian Aguilar.
Graham Ashcraft and Davis Daniel and guys like that. No, it's probably between Rhett Lauder and Chase Burns, and it's probably
going to be Chase Burns.
Chase Burns.
But so here's the thing. The fact that he came back from it, and this is also Chase Burns, would have been so easy for them to say, no, we're done. We've seen flexor strains before where, honestly, the best one is a flexor strain or like a forearm strain.
Though, isn't a flexor strain what Pablo Lopez has?
No, I know. But like, I'm thinking of, maybe forearm strain, flexor strain. I don't know, honestly, what distinction we should be making with them. Maybe it's a little bit different, of course, but I feel as though, like, we saw Max Fried have that and come back, and Brian Wu was a big thing with it. I'm talking about guys like previous season had it, came back, and then pitched fine next year, no problems. It is a really good point, and it is something that would prevent Burns. The fact of the matter is that he did come back, and he's designated as healthy now, which is all right. Like, welcome to starting pitching. So the thing that gets me excited is the fact, I had this ranking before this news, was that he's saying, oh yeah, I know that I can't be two pitches. I've already been like working massively on my changeup and curveball, but like changeup, when I hear changeup, I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
So I've already seen that be a really good offering for him. And I think that Chase Burns is not going to be two pitch. I really do actually believe in this emphasis, not like the old Tyler Glasnow or Chris Archer changeup. This is actually going to be a major weapon for him against lefties, and could even show up against righties. I think that can be very effective there too. And I really do think that the command overall of Chase Burns is far better than, I'd say, all of the hype seven. I think he has the best one, maybe Bubba Chandler, but he is so good at getting pitch separation with the four seam and slider. Mm-hmm. And yes, the velocity paired with the steep attack angle does say, yes, home runs can come, especially in that band box of Cincinnati, but he's great. Yeah. He's just great.
I will say I bringing all that stuff up for the point of discussion. I have him ranked 31st. And so even with like the, hey, he had a flexor strain last year, like I'm not saying, hey, let's avoid him.
It's a great point.
To be fair, I was under the impression that his draft cost was a little bit more elevated than it currently is. I'm using Kyle Bland's awesome Streamlit app that tracks the NFBC ADP over time. So this is from January 1st on. And realistically, like I could probably even update it more because now we're far into February. But let's say from January 17th on, so that's almost like a month, the last month. If I'm looking at just starting pitchers alone, Chase Burns is still the 29th starting pitcher off the board. He goes after Nolan McLean, after Spencer Strider, just ahead of Brandon Woodruff, Kevin Gausman, Tyler Glasnow. And so I think that's a perfectly fine range for Chase Burns to go in because we already talked about Woodruff and we know Glasnow are also guys who like maybe their ceiling is 130 innings. And so even if you're saying you are mildly concerned about Chase Burns, like I don't see any reason why you would project him for under 130 innings. So I think that's a totally fine range to be in. I'm taking him before Nolan McLean.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I mean,
there you go. We got this, Chase Burns.
One ADP that I think you and I have not quite gotten on board with is the last pitcher for today, your number 30 pitcher, who's Jesus Luzardo. He is my number 33 starting pitcher. Over the last month, he is the 20th starting pitcher off the board in NFBC drafts with an overall ADP of 78th overall.
Man.
I think that's too high.
I agree with you. The real issue with Jesus Luzardo is that his four-seamer is not good against right-handers.
Does he have
above-average command of making the seven. That is, if you're looking at the strike zone box and you're a lefty throwing to righties, you go up in the zone and inside. So you make that, you know, reverse L shape. And that's what he has to do because he has below 6 feet extension with dead zone movement on this fastball, but it's at 96. Well, okay, that actually kind of turns into 94.5. And that is the average fastball velocity with dead zone movement. And that's why that thing gets crushed a bit. And Luzardo is a story of plenty of injuries in his past. He had a long season in 2023, shortened 124, and finally had a full season for his first year with the Phillies last year. He did rise up my rankings because of that sinker to lefties. I think that's a huge deal. That's a much, much better sinker attack or fastball attack than it was with the Marlins for Jesus Luzardo. And at this end of the day, though, I just think he makes too many mistakes against righties. You're going to still see those home runs. You still are going to have a questionable ERA. Mm-hmm. I don't see him as a sub 110 whip guy. I see him more as a 115. And I think it's going to be like a 3.8 ERA, 117 whip with strikeouts, like 27%. Like that is the thing. So I look at it and go, okay, Cease versus Luzardo. And I go, Cease, because you are going to do it for longer. Luzardo has a much bigger ding when it comes to his health over his career. So I might be too harsh on Luzardo.
I don't think you are, though. I mean, I look at it this way. Last year, career high in innings. So health worked, checked exactly how you want it to last year. Last year, his strikeout rate of 28.5%, basically in line with his career norms, if not slightly better than his career norms. The barrel rate allowed was the lowest he's ever allowed. The hard hit rate allowed was the second lowest he'd ever allowed. His whip was, 1.22, basically right in line with his career norms. And he finished as the 29th best starting pitcher in fantasy. So what did he do last year that makes us think he's going to do something even better than what he did last year this year?
Well, okay.
He already improved a lot last year. We talked about the sweeper. We talked about career high in innings. He already took a big step forward last year. And I know people are going to say, well, he had that one stretch where he gave
up. That's what it is. They're saying that that's going to be a lesser one, but I don't agree with that either.
He's kind of always been. He's always had stretches where he has three or four starts where things don't go all that well because the command isn't pristine or whatever. Like, I just don't think you can write off those starts as saying, well, what if he just doesn't have that rough patch? Because he historically has always had a little bit of a rough patch in every season.
Absolutely. That's really it. And the sweeper instead of a slider is working better for him against right-handers.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's like this is a better version of Luzardo.
Agreed.
It's just not to be trusted as this always with also not allowing 20 earned runs in two games.
Yeah, I just don't think what we saw last year is great. I like the sweeper. It doesn't make me think there's yet another level that we haven't seen.
Yep. But
there are yet more pitchers that we haven't talked about, Nick.
No.
And we're going to keep getting to them. Again, as a reminder, we're going through 10 starting pitchers per podcast. We're going to get to more later this week. They'll be up on the feed. We're going to keep going through this. We're going to roll through the whole rest of spring training. Nick and I are going to continue to then talk about some stuff happening in spring training as well. It's going to be fun. We're kicking into high gear here in baseball season. But it's time for me to take a little nap, Nick. We've been up for a long time. Been up almost 11 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
It is just after 11 a.m. so it's been a long one. But I am Eric Smolsky, Pelican.
I'm Nick Ponk, the Lion.
And I'm going to lay down.